standing strong while I'm going and I'm striving. I'm relying on myself for as long as I'm surviving. Taking no excuses because your words are just useless. Kick off the dust and let's do this.
Hello and welcome to Remedy, a human awakening, a forum where we discuss the challenges we face as humans navigating today's fast-paced modern society. Today, Corey and I are talking about the movie Soul from Disney Plus. It was just recently released this year. It was actually Disney Plus's first direct-to-streaming movie, I believe it was. Most everything else was supposed to go to theaters, but as everybody knows with COVID, things like that are not happening. So they put it on that platform. My daughter told me about it originally. I remember seeing it, some of the little snippets here and there, and really just thought it was a kid's movie. It's animated. It's got some little glowing orb creatures and stuff in it. And at first glance, you just think it's kind of like a different version of Frozen or something like that. So I really didn't pay much attention. My daughter, who's 19, comes running in one night. Dad, you have to watch this. It's the best movie I've ever seen in my life. It's like life changing. I've just figured out what my spark is. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This is a kid's movie. So apparently it's not. So we put it on the agenda of something to talk about because the first time I watched it, it's really definitely profound. And then so I told Corey to watch it, and then I watched it again today, and so we're gonna sit and talk about it.
Yeah, and I guess it'd be a good time to say spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie and you want to be surprised. This isn't the podcast to listen to.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be good to come back to after watching the movie.
Sure.
But yeah, if you don't like spoilers, I would go and hit pause now and come back to it after you watch the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point, too. I really definitely think everybody should go watch this movie. It's truly a mind-altering movie and incredibly well done. So if you wanted to see that, if you want to see how it all plays out before we talk about it, then do exactly what Corey said. Press pause now. Don't forget to come back to us. You got to listen to it after you've watched it. But maybe even listening to our podcast will spark you to go watch it after we've kind of discussed it. So I think you win either way. But yeah, good point, buddy. So what were your initial impressions of it? Just like right off the top of your head before we get deep into the lot of the heaviness of it, really. Because I didn't tell you what it was about. I just said, hey, you saw it on the thing. And I was like, don't forget to watch that movie. Just the other day, and you're like, oh, good. Thanks for reminding me. I forgot that's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure you had no idea what it was even about, right?
No. So I don't know if I got another movie that you'd recommended watching previously confused with this one.
And, the platform.
Yeah, probably. And my wife and my son were like, hey, like, do you want to watch this movie with us? I'm like, what is it? And it's like, oh, it's Soul. Uh-huh. And then I had taken that information and applied to this situation. So my wife, well, hold on, you know, let's, you know, we'll get to that. And I was like, in a side conversation, I was like, I don't really think it's a kid's movie based off what Ashley said and this and that. So I totally like screwed them out of like watching the movie that night, right?
Thought I was talking about the platform.
Yeah.
Which we will talk about down the road because it is a very pertinent topic to talk about, but nothing like this movie.
Yeah.
Definitely probably not a kid's movie for your son.
Right. And so as I was kind of like, man, I'm like, this doesn't really make sense. I'm like, whatever, I'll roll with it. So then I was like, oh shit, like I need to watch this movie. Uh-huh. And my initial response was, fuck, this feels like homework. I don't want to do this. And then I hate like Pixar movies. Like it's just, I don't know, the novelty is like worn off on me. But
this all Pixar movies?
No, but I'm being 100. This is my feeling going into it.
Okay.
In the first like 5 minutes, I'm sitting there on the couch and my wife agreed to watch it with me last night. My son was with his grandparents. Uh-huh. And I was like, hey, I got this homework assignment. You want to watch this movie with me? And so we're sitting there and I'm just going like, fuck. And I saw how long it was. And I was just like, it's unusually long for an animated movie. And I was like, fuck. I'm like, all right, well, so I'm going to do it. So I got to do it. I would say it wasn't but 10 or 15 minutes into it that I was like, okay, I'm vested in this. Like it piqued my interest. So I guess, what was your question specifically? Cause I don't want to go too far down a tangent. Like what were my initial thoughts?
Yeah. Just give me like just a super quick impression, especially I think it's going to be so great because you thought I was talking about the platform, which is couldn't be more opposite. It's subtitles. It's a heavy fucking movie. Not that this isn't, but it's such a dark, other twisted way that will be such a great discussion. But it's so funny that you thought that's what we're watching going into this. And then also you hate Pixar movies and then and you don't know anything about what you're getting here and watched. Yeah. So like
I was pleasantly surprised. No. There's absolutely a few times. It really tied in. It pulled on the heartstrings of the fact that, as I get older and I see my son growing up and stuff, my greatest fear is to my voice crack because it's real. Is what is going to happen to him if I die? Right? Is like, when will I ever feel good about leaving him? So definitely brought that to the forefront. That was that was something that definitely caught me in the feels quite a few times. It was a recurring thought throughout the movie. I was pleasantly surprised. I think that the message was great. I definitely think it's pretty heavy for kids to be considering, but I also think it's important. I think there's a lot of good takeaways in regards to not get mired down in certain things and to not lose perspective, which seems to be a recurring, phrase that I have, in this podcast is perspective, perspective, perspective. But that movie was nothing but perspective.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing to point out, because you touched on it right there, is I think the one mistake in this is that it's not a mistake because I know Pixar did it, but you immediately categorize it as a kid's movie and it is not a kid's movie. I don't think they'll get anything out of it. Like literally, I think it's too deep for kids your son's age and younger to understand. And then mid-teens, I don't think their brain can wrap it around. I think it's why it hit my daughter at 19 so heavily. But we all think because it's on Disney, number one, it's going to be a kid's movie, and that it's Pixar, it's going to be a kid's movie. And I think this is 100% directed at adults. And I don't know why Disney did it that way. It's a little bit of an odd disconnect.
Yeah, maybe launching it under the platform of Disney, implies those things. But I understand and disagree, with the perspective of I don't think it's going to land or lend itself well to kids. But I'm literally looking forward to watching this with my son.
Yeah, let me know how it goes because I'm going to be curious about it.
He has questions about his own mortality.
Sure.
Right? And, he goes back and forth asking questions about God and religion and things like that. And, at the end of the day, he keeps landing back on he doesn't believe in a God and things like that. And so the idea of there not being something beyond this life mm-hmm. is something that he struggles to understand. Right. Mm-hmm. And
because he doesn't want to align with one particular religion at this age.
Yeah. So he's
or your family doesn't, I should say.
Yeah, we don't. Right. Mm-hmm. I guess with the phrase would be I'm agnostic. Right. Mm-hmm. Where I think my wife, she does and wants to for the fact of having the ability to see her brother that passed away at 26, things like that, right? Yeah. There's things that you hope to have another crack at in this life or in the afterlife. And, he's been exposed to a few different things and he struggles with it. And then when we talk about it, he's just like, what happens? What's next? Right. Like, why work so hard if there's nothing afterwards? And what I think this movie does a really good job is shining light on the fact that we are so focused on where we're going that we don't pay attention to where we are. Mm-hmm. There's little things like when 22, which is the glowing orb or one of them uh-huh. that's trying to find their spark. Yeah. When 22 was in Joe's body mm-hmm. and comes out of the subway and it's just chaotic. It's noise, right? It's bright and it's everything. Just there's so much happening mm-hmm. that we don't even consider those things, right? We're so numb to it being, so overloaded, our sensory systems being overloaded.
Right.
And it reminded me of the moment when I got my hearing aid mm-hmm. and I was immediately overwhelmed with sound. Mm-hmm. And, I think I was at 31, 32 when I got the hearing aid for the first time. And I remember just like hearing the sound of the doctor who was actually a friend of mine, which is why I finally went and got my hearing checked as an adult. I heard her walking down the hallway, which I had no idea that she was made carpet or made noise on carpet. Mm-hmm. And then she's writing stuff down. I'm like, what the fuck is that noise? I'm like, oh, shit, that's pen on paper. Like for me, it was just like, and then so as I used the hearing aid as a tool, I became so much more aware of things that I did not want to hear, that I didn't want to deal with. It was too much. And And it's so crazy because it did such a good job illustrating that in the movie.
So let's not get ahead of ourselves. Okay. Really quick. I have one question for you, yep, and then we'll give a quick overview of the movie so people that haven't seen it understand what the fuck we're even talking about. You talk about 22 and an orb. What age do you think? Because your son is 10, right?
Yeah.
And what age do you think close enough? We won't worry about it. maybe by the time he hears this, he'll be 11. Right. What do you think would be the low age cutoff? Because I'm thinking of my niece who's right there, 4, and my nephew who's 6. I don't think that's why I said I don't think kids are going to get anything out of it.
I think 5 to 10. I think it's something that will create confusion.
Yeah.
And not be an enjoyable experience. But yeah, I think below that, to where they're not, it's kind of like, you know, it's like those adult jokes that seem to find their way into the movies.
Right? Yeah.
Like they just
Lego they right over the kid. And yeah, all those things. Because I'm thinking, as we discuss a Pixar movie, there's different ranges. There's Frozen people don't kill me if it's not a fucking Pixar movie, because I never watched it. But there's a Frozen, there's Toy Story, there's all of these very young kid things where my 4-year-old niece could sit and watch it and be mesmerized by it just simply because Elsa's up there singing the damn song or something like this. I don't think this movie is that. So then I look at my nephew who's like 6 and he's got all the energy of a 6-year-old boy. I don't know that I see him sitting still for this movie exactly. I just don't know. So probably like 8 or so, depending, like everybody judge your own kids. But if you have like a real cerebral 8-year-old, maybe, but probably like your son's age would be and up would be the target for him to be able to do that.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where, you know, it's hard because I don't like to make assertions on what people are capable of doing or not doing or the information they can process. But I think it's one of those movies that if you pay attention, mm-hmm, it delivers a very powerful message, mm-hmm, and invokes some very serious thoughts and, mm-hmm, feelings.
So everybody should just go into it with the knowledge of, would your kids be able to process that, whatever age that is?
Yeah. And it's not as casual as like an adult punchline, you know, like every 5 to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's a constant theme throughout the entire movie that only escalates to a culmination of, mm-hmm, really defining the point of the movie.
Right.
And
I think for me, what I'm saying is my point is like a Toy Story. That's a Pixar movie. Surely as adults, we can watch that. And there's all kinds of underlying themes there that are bigger stories than little kids will pick up on, but they're toys that are animated and that come to life when people leave the room and stuff. And so a 4-year-old can grasp, like just be mesmerized by that. I'm not sure that there's enough like little kid action type stuff in this movie necessarily to hold their curiosity. But at the age where an awareness starts coming in and provokes discussion, this movie will really be a lot for families to talk about.
Yeah, right? It'll definitely bring up some talk or conversations that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people feel uncomfortable having to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess it's hard because I went into watching it, being critical and really focusing in on certain things.
Well, you also thought it was a movie about the downfall of society in a prison.
No. So like, I didn't know the specifics of what the platform was, okay, right? Other than just being like a very heavy, like, you know, yeah, I don't know the best way to characterize it. But so for me, I didn't watch it casually. Okay. I watched it intently.
Okay.
You know, so I think for that, I think, you know, you could read more into things. Mm-hmm. And I think that where we're at in our lives and the things that we're both actively working on with ourselves, I think it only highlights a lot of those things. So then I think it feels a little different, where I think someone uninitiated or someone that's not considering those things, they might just completely like overlook a lot of those things, you know.
But your son was able to also process stuff because of some of the conversations you were having and whatnot.
Well, he hasn't watched it yet. So that's,
oh, that's right. That's,
yeah,
right.
So we're going to watch it. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I'll be able to have a much better opinion about that after this, but
and watch too, because you'll be able to experience it with a child present. That
exactly right. And, I'm not setting it up for him, other than I thought I said, because he asked what we did, said we watched the movie, and he was kind of like, oh, dude, like you said, I couldn't watch it. And my response was like, I think it's a great movie and I look forward to watching it with you. Mm-hmm. And that's where we left it. Yeah. At.
You still can't watch the other movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I thought it was. So in a nutshell, here's what the movie's about. So if you want to skip over, now would be a good time to do it. If you want to pause, now would be a great time to do it. But here's essentially what it's about. Character that's voiced by Jamie Foxx is a musician, and he's a high school band teacher. He gets a full-time gig. He gets offered a full-time gig, and they make a very specific point of saying it's full-time now, steady pay, weekends off, benefits, a pension. And he goes and tells his mom about it. And his mom's, who's a tailor, says, well, that's what we've been waiting for our whole lives, for you to have. You made it. You did the thing, the stereotypical thing in life that we're all just, you know, hamsters on a wheel trying to get. So he gets that. And then he gets a phone call from one of his former students, who's a drummer for a famous jazz saxophone player. And he tells the kid, I can't believe you're playing for that lady. That's literally like my dream come true. I could die a happy man if I played for it. And the kid says, we have a chance. We need a piano player. Ours flaked. So come on down and do an audition. He runs down there. He does his audition, just kills it. And that's a little bit of the setup of the movie, is him going into the zone and kind of losing himself in music. He does it really early on for one of in his classroom for the students. And they all kind of like become more aware of him in that scene. And then he does it again for this audition. He does it a couple of different times throughout the movie. So he nails that audition. She tells him, come back tonight, you got the job. And then he kind of navigates some peril really quick, and then basically like falls down a fucking hole and is in the process of dying. That's probably what the setup is. So they're all streaming towards this little light out there in the universe, heaven, if you will.
And therefore it is the great beyond.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing, is the movie does a really great job of staying like as neutral as you could be in religion. And what a tough thing for Pixar to have written in a script of, we are going to talk about an afterlife, but we're not going to make it any specific channel. And that's, I think, pretty amazing, because me being, I would say, frankly, almost an atheist at this point, but heavily agnostic, that would have lost me if it went towards any specific religion, because then I feel like I'm getting sold something. But it was just, hey, you're going, you're, everybody's moving along towards the light, towards, yep,
there's the an escalator towards a bright light.
Yep, that's about it. And he doesn't want to do that. So he goes running back and jumps off and gets into the pre-life, which is where souls are created, if you will, where your being, your consciousness, your personality. It's how it's developed. And they actually have these little badges that they're kind of, everybody's collecting their own personalities and stuff. And then they have mentors, and he kind of like connives his way into being a mentor, who he's not. Like they're famous people that are supposedly mentoring these souls, and the souls are supposed to go to Earth obviously children, and born with these personalities that they're preloaded in, basically. But they're all different, and they do a really good job doing that too, of kind of really, they must have done a lot of psychological research into psyche and personality profiles and traits, and it was really, really incredible how they did that. So he gets mentored with 22 that Corey just mentioned. And that is a soul that has not made it to Earth, because it's incredibly contrary. It just basically has no reason. It can't earn its little extra point on the Earth badge that gets it to Earth, because it just can't find why it exists. And then along that little journey, you get introduced to a character that is out helping lost souls, which is another theme in the movie, of having a lost soul as well. And you're just like, holy shit, this thing gets really, really deep. And this little ship of yoga practitioners, basically. Yeah. They come around, they see these little hulking creatures out in the dark that's a lost soul, and they surround it and do a little drum beat and stuff. And they like lift the weight off of that person and help that person find their spark and their soul and kind of awaken that lost soul. So, Joe. Real quick.
Yeah.
Go.
So why is 22,
22? Fuck, I don't know.
So I didn't catch it in the moment. I was laying in bed last night. I thought about it. So when they were, pairing
the soul. Can I just throw out, just off the top of my head?
Yeah.
Is it a catch 22?
No. Oh, I don't know. Maybe that's
no, I just threw that at you. Huh? Yeah.
So when they're repairing the Mentors of the Souls, uh-huh. right? It's like, I can't remember if it was 1 billion something or 9 billion, right? Uh-huh. But they have this ridiculous high number, but then they apply that 22 has been there forever, as in the 22nd soul that never made it to graduate. And so they'd already gone through 9 billion other souls.
Wow.
They've gotten their badges to go. Uh-huh. And so then that's why I think it's a she. I mean, they give it a
Tina voice. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. So, you know, I think that's why 22 is 22.
But the funny part about that is he's like, why do you have the voice of a middle-aged white woman? And she's like, it's just what I pick. It's because I find it the most irritating. And it's Tina Fey's voice. She's like, it irritates people the most because I could be any voice I want. And she kind of goes through about four different voices and chose that. So even that is like really well played as to why they picked this voice to be irritating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you think it's the 22nd soul that was formed
from when they started doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And because they do say this soul has been there for thousands of years.
Right. And then they go back and you look at all the mentors, right? Mm-hmm. And so historically, if you go back to the people that were trying to mentor 22 unsuccessfully, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, you've been around forever.
Forever. Yeah. You know, I mean, you're talking about historical figures that tried to mentor this person and help them find their
thousands of
spark
years.
And they all failed.
Yeah.
So Joe is the main character, right? Yep. Yeah. So he takes her down. Well, he actually kind of does an end run and gets launched back down onto Earth when he's not really supposed to. And he ends up in a cat's body and she ends up in his body. Her soul is occupying him, but everybody in society believes it's him. It's his voice.
We skipped over a very important part. Mm. So Joe ended up finding himself as he was supposed to be going on to the great beyond. He ended up going back to the before, right?
Correct.
And Joe has this overwhelming anxious anxiety because he was very close to achieving what it is that he wanted, which was to be able to play in that band.
Right.
And there was a live gig taking place that night.
Right.
And then he needed to show up in a nice suit and all those things. Yep. Right. And so he's literally doing everything he can in the before. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to connive 22 into giving her Earth Pass, which is she has to find her spark. She gets the soul gets a path. He can take that for himself because she doesn't want to leave.
And then she doesn't even want to go to Earth.
Right. Exactly.
Point.
So she's like, oh, you're not going. And so he's trying to do everything he can to figure it out. But that's how he ended up falling into the cat's body. So he was rushing that process. Mm-hmm. Right. And so
he's almost obsessive about it.
Exactly.
Getting back so he can live hasn't lived his life up till that. Because actually, to touch on that point, he walks through like a hall of reflection of himself. And he sees himself eating alone at a diner. He sees all these different points and he goes, my life is nothing. My life is meaningless up until this point. So he believes that, and he's probably, I would say, a 40-year-old man in that range-ish, somewhere in there. And he's looking at the reflection of his life as nothing has occurred.
Meaning.
And the ultimate achievement eluded him because he's in the process of dying before he gets there and should be dead if he had continued on to the afterlife there.
Yeah.
So you're right. And so he bombs down into Earth. He ends up in the cat's body. 22 ends up in his body. And then they navigate a while. They navigate that day together. He goes and gets his suit. He does all of this stuff. And then one of the really profound things that happens is they have an argument. They're talking about, you know, like, this isn't for me, that why they're like kind of their little arrangement is falling apart. And 22 pulls all of this stuff out of her pocket and says, look at all the things I found. Look at all the things I did today. Maybe I found my purpose, which is like watching leaves, or I'm a walker. I'm a really good walker, like maybe one of the best. And he's like, basically saying none of that matters. That's just what everybody does. And she's so enamored with the things she's just experienced on Earth, every little nuanced thing. And he's saying, no, that doesn't matter because that's what everybody does. And so he keeps hammering on, you have to find your purpose. You have to find your spark. You have to do all that stuff. So.
Yeah, no. And I think it's important because up until that point is 22 is in Joe's body and having to go around and interact in public as Joe. And Joe is this therapy cat that was placed with him in the hospital while he was in this transitioning phase. And so he's interacting and kind of instructing 22 on how to do things. But then 22 starts acting independently and developing these relationships and gaining these experiences And Joe's kind of, as the cat's having to sit there and watch it, right? I think one of the great illustrations of that is when they went to the barbershop and having the conversation, you know, and to getting to learn more about the barber. I can't remember his name, right? But, you know, just to go through that, and it's just like, it's like, man, like, and then 22 is like asking as if she was Joe, you know, like, how come we never talked about that? Well, you never asked me, right? And Joe is being confronted with, he's lived his life to what he thinks is a good, meaningful way. And he's being shown that that's not necessarily true. And so then, yeah, going back to your point, you know, getting there, 22 has accumulated all these things where part of a pizza crust or a bagel, you know, and that those are all symbolic of the experiences that were had in that day leading up to the moment of trying to get ready to perform in that show so that Joe didn't miss this moment.
Yeah. And he had ignored all of that stuff. He didn't care about that. All he cared about was getting back into his body so he could perform that night for the thing that he had spent his whole life trying to achieve. And then so remind me of how, like, they go back up to the before. This is where it's going to get weird for people. It's like they keep bouncing all around. So they go back up there. They kind of have an argument. She goes off and goes into like kind of a dark place, right? Where it's like angry souls.
So Joe that, and the cat's body was still trying to get all these things done and arranged in a way and trying to find resolution to this problem. Right. And so they found that person, that servant of souls.
Yeah. The lost soul finder.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the hippie spinning the sign. they found that guy and was like, hey, like, is there any way to undo this? And it's like, yeah, you know, okay. But it's, I love the way that he said it, you know, I forgot what he said, but then he's like, yeah. Or he's like, you know, as the state would say, 6:30 like PM or whatever. It was just like the man or something. Like, it was funny.
And there's so many great quotes in that movie, just like one liners. And again, that's where I think, like, I like Pixar movies. Cause as an adult, when kids are sitting there just mesmerized on it and you pick up on some of the stuff, you know, or like, that's actually really funny. And that's way deeper than a kid would understand.
Yeah.
But this is even bigger than that. Like one of the quotes that like early on is, you can't crush a soul when they're in the before life thing, when they're the area of souls, something falls over and it looked like it smashed this whole little blob of little souls and everything. And they all come popping out and the character looking at it goes, oh, don't worry about it. You can't crush a soul here. That's what life on earth is for. And you look at that, it's like, oh, there's some clever shit in there.
Yeah.
So they're trying to swap bodies basically so he can achieve, like, find her spark for her, for 22, find, get what matters to her, find it, achieve it, unlock her pass. And then,
and the irony is that all those things that you're talking about where Joe was undermining 22's enthusiasm for things, that was her finding her spark, but no one knew it.
Right.
And she didn't want to leave Joe's body because she had actually started to enjoy being on Earth and taking notice of the things, of the trees and the breeze and the interactions with people and things like that. And he's just trying to like move her along through this process, like, so he can get his body back to do what he thought his purpose was, which was playing with that jazz band. And then they end up going back to the before, and he's kind of like having to like chase her down because he's trying to get his body back and everything and still win in his own mind. And then he ends up coming across that soul guide, you know, out cruising the whatever that is in the ship, you know, and they ended up finding 22, like having to chase her down.
Yeah, because she's now what I would say is like a disturbed soul. Like it's a soul that's not just a lost soul. Now it's like angry and it's in conflict. And it's a very powerful scene where they're like kind of like lasso her and the ship's getting drug and stuff like that. And so they're trying to wrangle her back in when it's turned like really, really bad at that point. Yeah. And then they do. And then he goes back down into his own body. Right. Well,
so the biggest thing was, or I think one of the important parts is he is trying to apologize. Like he's trying to correct the errors of his ways.
Because he realized he had stifled her.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that he'd put himself before her. And so now he's being selfless in his actions, but he's being confronted with all those dark emotions that she was feeling, that, you know, had her as one of those lost souls. And then he sees himself yelling at himself, you know, you'll never be able to do this. That's not important. Right. All those things that he'd said to her. And it took him, you know, showing one of the things that, you know, she had acquired throughout that day that he had taken with him, to kind of like set everything else aside to regain a little bit of perspective. And then that's when they were able to move forward.
Okay. And then he goes back down, he plays his performance for that thing. And you know, and they kind of wrap up on all of that. And then what does she go on and do? Remind me of that part.
And so it doesn't, you don't get any of that. You don't get any ending. Yeah. So
she's just
throughout this,
she just gets to go to Earth and become whatever it is she's supposed to be.
Yeah. So,
really great, because that's, again, the souls are just preloaded with what a personality is. And they have a really cute sequence kind of early on. It's like, I'm a megalomaniac little, and there's these cute little things, and they're describing their little personality traits. And some of them are very stoic. These are going into the aloof building, and they all come out with just kind of that aloof thing. And so it's great, because I think it would have been so much simpler for the writers to just say, this one's going down there to be a musician, and this one's going down there to do that. And they don't. They're just like, these little souls are preloaded with personality traits, and boom, they go down onto Earth to become whatever it is they're supposed to be. Because I think a lot of times we all have that feeling that you're destined to be a writer, or you're destined to be a athlete, or you're destined to be that stuff. And it's like, no, you just have personality traits. And then really, as parents, we're kind of forcing our ideals onto it. And then there's another really important topic to throw in there, and then I'll let you talk about that, is the flow state. Remember, that's like when people are in the zone, and they really discuss that. Like, he does it as a pianist. And they actually talk about, there's this room of souls that are like the pinnacles of those moments. And when you're in that flow state, you're tapping into those resources. You're channeling those rooms of souls and people that are in whatever creative endeavor it was when you're in that zone. And then little 22 was fucking it all up for people. She's like, oh, I love this room. And she's like, throw shit at those souls and screws them up.
And distract them.
Yeah. There's like a basketball player going in for a slam dunk, and she hits his channeling thing, and it like goes away, and he like misses the dunk, and they're like, and the Knicks lose another one.
Yeah. You know? She's like, oh, I love messing with this team. And she's
She's just like in there creating havoc amongst the room. But it's really and it really, as you watch this movie, I think the overwhelming thing that I was struck with was it taps into your emotional state. We've all been in those spaces. Again, they're not saying whatever it is. It's just whatever your jam is, when you tap into that thing and you feel like, I can't do any wrong these days. I mean, shit, you felt it. You went off a fucking giant rock roll the other day and then did another one. And then you have those days. And then other days you're like, I can't ride my bike around a parking lot without falling down. And like, it's, we all know what that is. And they do such a good job of bringing you along like that.
No, there's a point that I want to make, and I'm trying to not forget it, but there's another important component to the movie is all of this matters because there's a character called the accountant that's responsible for making sure tracking those outgoing souls and how many people are going to the great beyond. Mm-hmm. And so he took notice of the fact that the count was off. And so he's trying to correct it. And so he had the opportunity to go back down to Earth and to recapture Joe's soul and to put him in the great beyond and to correct the balance of the universe, or however you want to describe it. Mm-hmm. And so that played a big part in it. And then at the end of the movie, is the 22 ends up getting her badge, which so she gets her Earth patch, and so Joe as the mentor was able to walk her to this hole where they get to like basically like skydive down to Earth, which is pretty cool. And he's able to like go as far as he can on that journey with her, and then she continues on, and you don't know what happens with her. Mm-hmm. But basically, he's accepted the fact that he's going to the great beyond. You know, that was his selfless act once he, you know, became fully aware of, you know, that playing the show wasn't his purpose and things like that.
Right.
And what ended up happening is, I think they call the Sevens, had offered him, because he was able to help 22, they basically made an exception of like, hey, we're going to give you a second chance. Mm. And then so they had corrected.
Second chance at life.
Exactly. And so they'd corrected the count.
They fucked with that guy.
Yeah.
A little bit. They distracted him while he turned his head. They like turned his little abacus.
Yep. Exactly. Like, okay, we're good. Oh, sorry. I have no idea what that was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they ended up giving him a second chance, and he has a realization of this one singular thing, which was being a musician at a certain level, was his entire identity. And he realized that wasn't his purpose. That wasn't his spark. And that there's a lot more to life. And the point that I wanted to make was, I think that they did an amazing job writing it in such a structured and intelligent way that would invoke many thoughts and feelings, but leaving it vague enough for you to insert yourself perfectly in there, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure your experience and takeaway and the thoughts and feelings you had were incredibly unique to you, mm-hmm. right? And they were for me.
Yeah.
And I can imagine you could sit in, if it was pre-COVID, this movie came out, right? You got 200 people in a movie theater and you're going to come out with like 195 different variations mm-hmm. and thoughts and feelings. And they're all true.
Yeah.
You know, and
that, your son's going to have his thing and my 19-year-old daughter's going to have her thing. And yeah. that's pretty rare to have something like that where everybody has a different takeaway of it. Unless it's just some so fucking random movie that nobody quite knows what the hell is going on. but like, I think back to one of the most profound movies I ever watched, and then I watched it. It's the movie I watched the most in theaters was Forrest Gump, because you realize how masterfully done that movie is on so many levels. And I think I watched it 8 or 10 times in the movie theaters. But everybody is walking out of that place in pretty much the same mindset of the journey they got taken on and stuff. Whereas this, you're exactly right. Everybody's going to come away. You're watching it through your own lens very, very clearly and looking at it and going, look, I better. And then also, too, with the kind of almost like a call to action of you don't know when your last day on earth is. Like yeah. you're living every day as though it's your last. And here he is rushing around to achieve this thing. And he wasn't going to make it. And that can happen to all of us. If what my takeaway is from it on the big thing is, and then we'll talk about kind of some of the bigger meanings in there is, like if you're living as though my achievement will be tomorrow, you might not make it there. And I think that speaks hugely to me because I was in a profession where I saw a lot of death and I watched I watched people die. And then I like investigated deaths, lots of them. And you see people that didn't realize they were going to die. One sticks out with me, probably the most like that, because it was the most random. This gentleman left his home at 5 o'clock in the morning and within a mile of his house, we probably still don't know why it happened. His car lost control just on a road by itself on a regular urban little like around the corner from his house. And it slid sideways into a light pole and hit him in the door. And he's called DRT. He's dead right there. So and you're standing there looking at somebody that like a couple things are going on. I had the realization that his family is within a mile of us and they don't know that he's dead right now. And how will that change them when they're told this? Cause one of our group right here is going to have to go over and break that news to him. And so their life has already changed and they don't realize it. And they get to live in a happy state for a little bit longer. And this guy didn't. And also this guy, when he got up and did whatever he did that morning, he didn't realize he wasn't coming back that day. And I don't know that I had really more of a bigger epiphany at work than that, specifically of this guy is dead through it was the randomness of, I would say, nature or the world or whatever you want to call it. Like if you're religious, then you're going to say God called him home. But whatever your thought process, like nothing else happened to him. He didn't get hit by another car. He didn't get like nothing. And it didn't even look like he was doing anything really wrong. He wasn't a young teenager driving like an asshole, like just a guy going to work and somehow managed to lose control of his car in a very minor way. He was probably traveling about 50 on a 45, which is completely reasonable for the roadway. And his car slid just like a drift, like the back end stepped out and he just slid, didn't even like do a 360, just slid the car and boom, took that thing in the door, was wearing his fucking seatbelt, like everything. And you look at that and go, that dude's done right there. So in the premise of this movie, if he was still living, like I'm going to achieve that goal, I'm going to stop this dead end job that I'm going to, I have to like perceive a lot of things here. I have to basically like think about a lot of things that I could be very wrong about, speculate. But like if he was driving to a job that he hated or was having a marital conflict that he hadn't resolved or you name it at that point and he thought he had tomorrow to fix it all or a week or he was going to do that next year or he was living for retirement or whatever. And that's where I think the movie for me really put a sense of urgency on stuff is to like take joy in those moments kind of thing. So
no, absolutely. It's so funny you use that that example from your previous work, is literally that exact scenario happened to my wife. Mm-hmm. She just happened to miss the light pole on the door by like a foot and a half. Mm-hmm. But right on Rocky Ridge, mm-hmm. just where it makes that little serpentine, mm-hmm. spun out, went mm-hmm. up right over the curve in the truck and hit the light pole, mm-hmm. ended up totaling the truck, mm-hmm. you know. But literally, it's just, it's those little small, simple things. Mm-hmm. And you don't think much of it because it's like, okay, well, she was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple feet difference, mm-hmm. you know, anything else. If she slid the opposite direction in incoming traffic, you know, so it's.
That's fucking bone chilling that you actually say that, because I investigated a fatal accident in that exact same spot. Yeah. And we didn't know why the one person died, because the accident, it was not high speed enough. Like the way the cars hit and everything, it didn't seem like it was that egregious, really. I mean, it's 45 through there or something like that.
No, 35 like, in the corners there.
Yeah. And I was like, why is this person dead? And their aorta detached from their heart. It just, something happened just right. And that, maybe it was weak, maybe it was whatever, but it shouldn't have been a fatal accident. And like, dude, that's really weird. Like in that literally exact same spot.
Yeah.
For like, cause that's a very specific corner and weird.
Yeah.
Weird. Well, I'm glad she's here still, but, yeah. So to kind of talk about some of the things in the movie, so just some of the themes, I wrote down a couple key points that I got from it was finding your spark, lost souls, and that spark isn't a purpose as well. So finding your spark, I think that's something, and that's one of the things I remember my daughter come running at me, and she was so overly excited and like had diarrhea of the mouth, like trying to tell me in 30 seconds what this entire movie was about. I was like, I don't even know what the words you're speaking right now. You've got a lot of volume coming at me right now. And I think watching her reaction versus my reaction, obviously, if you heard me talk through this here, you're hearing somebody that's 46 years old and had a law enforcement career for over 20 years and stuff. So you're looking at somebody who has a very different perspective on life than my daughter, who's 19 and just in the beginning of her adultness, if you will. She's out in the world. She's living on her own. She's starting to learn what being an adult is like. We actually make fun of that fact quite often. Like, oh, that's big adult lessons today, you know? So listening to her talk about it, I think she realized that she might have been fed a line for quite a long time of like the school system and life and everybody trying to figure out. And I, frankly, as parents, we're all guilty of it because we're trying to find things that our kids enjoy. And a lot of times those might be things that we enjoy. So I didn't want her to play soccer. I just wanted her to play a sport. And soccer was kind of what she landed on early on. And my early on thing was, well, if you're going to play a sport, I'd rather you just play that sport than bounce around to a bunch of them. And we're just like crazy with five sports kind of thing. And you don't really get good at any of them. So that was my thought process. And so we went heavily into soccer and kind of that was her jam. But was it? and then you have the real ability to start pigeonholing your child into, you could be really good at soccer, because she's a natural athlete. So she has the ability to be really good at it. And then you start going down that, oh, you could play in college, you could do that. So then you start developing a spark for people, and you're dictating that spark to people.
Yeah. You can say in the nefarious sense, you are consciously forming their own perspective of themselves.
Yeah.
For them,
yeah.
Instead of helping them self-identify what it is that they're looking for,
yeah.
And that's something that I, while that's always my goal with my son, is to just teach him how to question things, critical thinking skills, you know, communication skills. It's like, you're going to do whatever makes you happy. Like, I had no idea I was going to end up where I'm at and to go down the road that I did. But no one really taught me how to ask questions and self-evaluate and things like that, and so. Even though that is like my overarching goal with him, I still catch myself projecting onto him. And it's like, shit, you know, then we have the conversation like, hey, like, I have to apologize. Hey, I said and did these things for my own reasons, mm-hmm. and trying to explain and justify that, you know, as he gets older, it gets easier to have those conversations, mm-hmm. you know, but it's being human is inherently selfish,
mm-hmm.
right? We're all here self-serving, trying to do things that we want. We do nice things for others because it's a nice thing to do, but we also enjoy that feeling that we get of seeing someone else happy based upon our actions or the things that we've done. Mm-hmm. So it's managing that without managing someone else's perspective of themselves. And it's very difficult.
And I think that's what my daughter's realization was, is that you get fed all of this stuff that you have to find your purpose in life. Find your purpose as though it's one singular thing. And that's what the movie
is. I don't think it's purpose anymore, though. It's find a way to make a paycheck so that you can go purchase shit and you can generate tax revenue for the state. Like,
yeah. You know, in Western society, that's certainly what it is. And then the whole Instagram culture and the things that we've talked about on prior podcasts of social media conditioning you to be like, everybody's got to be influencer pretty or the best bike rider, or like, because we only show ourselves the best. And so then she is getting fed a litany of falsehoods in life and realizing that it's not that. Like, there's more to, like, I think she would even be the most susceptible versus us of just every day sucks and I'm living for that. And I can't wait to, well, for her, I can't wait to go to college because that's where it's going to be different. And she's learning. She's the same person in a different environment and this and this and this. And so I think that realization for her of finding your spark, because that's what he's chasing in the beginning, as though that's somehow the thing, right? He's telling all of his students that, and he's doing this thing as though, and for his mom, it was a different thing. It was, you have a steady income and you have a pension and you have health benefits. And that was what life is supposed to be about as far as attainment goes. And he absolutely didn't want that. And neither of them were wrong, because like for her, maybe with her, they don't really go into it too much, but maybe with her lifestyle and upbringing, that is the pinnacle of achievement is being able to be safe and steady and provide for your family. But for his personality, his little thing that he was created as a soul, that wasn't what sparked him. He wanted to be in that flow state and he wanted to create and he wanted to see that back with other people as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, within the movie, you know, I think they do a good job of, you know, showing both sides of what it is that he was seeking and why he was seeking it. And, you know, when he referenced his father was a jazz musician that had got him into, you know, wanting to play jazz and tells a little bit about that in the beginning of the movie. But the fact that his father chasing his dream didn't pay the bills, right? Mm-hmm. And it was his mom's business that afforded the luxury for him to go chase his dreams.
Right.
And her biggest fear was, you know, since his dad had passed, that, well, when I'm gone, who's going to be here to take care of you, right? Mm-hmm. And so she's pushing him down the road where somewhere I share with my son is just, I just want you to have the skills and resources necessary to succeed, if not thrive, when I'm not here to help you, mm-hmm. you know, when you don't have my support and backing.
But that becomes a bigger thing in and of itself too, because that's then again us projecting back onto it. Because who's to say that his dad, as a jazz musician, may not have made hardly any money and couldn't support his family, but he might have been content and well, like he that was his purpose, that was his thing, that was his flow state. That was all of the things that the movie lays out. And yet his mom is saying, but he wasn't a good father. Well, in reality,
he wasn't financially able to provide for the family.
Sure. And so again, by a different standard of ideals, he wasn't living the life that he was supposed to, but maybe within his own self, he was the most fulfilled that he could be.
Yeah.
And I
think it just makes the point of, you know, you can only do that if you're afforded, if you have clothes and you have food and things like that, right? Yeah. At some point you can't just chase any dream. Like, you have to be able to provide for yourself in the most basic necessities.
True. Yeah. You can't, the old starving artist is that if you're truly starving but again, that goes back to what matters most to you. Is it not living with your parents, or is it I'm creating things that are truly fulfilling to me outside of the monetary need for it, you know? And this is, trust me, this isn't something that I can actually answer, because I go back and forth between that sounds like dirty hippie talk. And, you know, like, that's great to talk about creating your art. That's like the most god awful shit I've ever seen. And you live with your parents and you like have no money and can't provide for yourself. But that's again, projecting my ideals onto somebody who's like, yeah, and I'm cool with that. Cause that's like, I look at it as irresponsible and all of these other things. And then I look and go, okay, but here I am chasing a business and I have a retirement. I have all these things and it's still not enough. Sometimes it's like, who's better off at the end of the day? That's the tough part. And you can hear it both when Corey and I say these things, when he starts talking about his son, I want my son to be happy, but I also need to make sure he has these things. And what if your son came to you and said, I'm going to go join a commune. We're growing our own food. We live off the grid. And we're just going to paint and talk about feelings all day. And like, that's what truly makes me happy. I can see the look on your face. And goddamn, I wish we were videoing this right now.
No, it's
because
just,
you're just like,
my wife and we've had those conversations.
Be happy.
No, we've had those conversations. It's just like, you know, we joke about some various scenarios where it's just like, I'm like, fuck, like, I will do whatever I can to support them and whatever is going to make them happy within reason. But then there's other shit where I'm just like, I tell my wife, I'm going to have a hard fucking time if it goes down the road. It is what it is, you know. It's just, and so it's, you know, it's really interesting. But then whose responsibility is it to define what success is, right? Or what level which of suffering is acceptable, right? You know, and I think that's a very personal thing. I know that putting myself in some pretty shitty situations and, you know, having to suffer because of those decisions or lack of decisions, you know, that really helped shape me into a better person. Right. But I was definitely in this finite space where it was just, you know, it almost broke me at the same time, you know, and a few more things would have went wrong. Like, you know, there's a really good chance that I wouldn't be sitting here today. Right. So it's, you know, it's difficult, but then it's like sitting here now, I wouldn't have changed anything for it. You know, I wish some things didn't happen, but you know, without those experiences, you know, I wouldn't be the person I am today. So it's, you know, I have to take the bad with the good. Yeah. So it's hard, and I don't want to shortchange my son of those life experiences. I just hope he doesn't do anything.
Well, you can't. That's the other thing too, right? You know, not to get off topic, because this would be a good one for another podcast at some point, but it's like, you can't shield your child from the pain, you know, no matter how much we want to. We never want our children to feel discomfort, but you have to. Like, it's going to come whether you try to or not. I mean, hell, not to be super like morose about it, but it actually could come in the form of losing us. Like, our children could feel the most pain by losing us. And that's something we have no control over. As much as we believe we do, we don't. So that's the tough part.
You want to dovetail those two things, the topic of the movie and that together. So that's how I felt going down that, the bigger rock. Christmas tree rock, right? Is
that what we're calling it now? I think we're calling it Corey's rock.
Whatever. It's
Christmas tree rock, and Todd hates that because it's Todd's. It was Todd's rock. Yeah. But it was actually my rock before Todd's, as John pointed out the other day. We'll call it Christmas tree rock because that's everybody's rock.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's the rock.
For those that don't know, you can actually jump on to this isn't a shameless plug. I have a IG page called Remedy Creative, and I took some pictures of Todd going down it and then John going down it the first time. As of this, when this gets posted, they'll probably be on there as of right when we're recording it. John he's sitting at the top of the rock. I'm building suspense in the post, but I actually have a series of photographs of his face as he goes down this. It's a monstrous rock. I'm not going to fucking lie. There's a lot of people that will not go down this. It's a giant boulder where we ride mountain bikes. And it's a two-part thing. So it's not just the fact that it's steep. It's when you're sitting at the top, you can't see the landing. So it's not just this like roll that's like, whoa, that's a big roll. I go over the lip of this thing and I don't know where I'm going when I get down. The second half of it is completely blind. And that second half is the steepest part. And it's fucking terrifying. And I stopped doing it for a while because I had less than a 50% success ratio. I did it 7 times and 4 of them were not good. So it's a fucking giant thing. So our buddy John did it the other day, and is super elated. And then Corey, the fucking sandbagger here, is like apparently just sitting on that because next day they go out, boom, he goes down and then does a huge other roll.
So you want to know what did it? Is when I was fishing, I had enough service and it popped up like your guys's IG story, whatever it was, of like John doing it. And then you guys ended it with, you know, like, now I have to get Corey out here.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And so then like my buddies were with me, like, dude, they just called you out. Yeah. So like, it was like in my head, I was like, and then I just woke up and I was just like, I'm like, I need to do this. It was something I wanted to do. So going back to the flow state, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Is it took me, so we went out there. Mm-hmm. It took me 2 hours to do those two things.
No shit.
Yeah. And the, it took me like probably like an hour to do the first smaller rock roll. Like it was just, you know, it was deep in my head.
Which smaller rock roll?
The whale tail.
Whale rock.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Whatever it is. Yeah. So going down that way.
But that's a good warm up because it's steep when you're on the side of it and and it's steep as shit. I've seen people eat shit on that before, but you can see the whole thing. You know what you're in for when you're sitting at the top, you can see the roll down and it kind of fucks with you in that stance of like, dude, that's pretty heavy.
Yeah. Well, and if you make a mistake of going to the right, like you're going to stop abruptly.
Yeah.
But yeah. So then,
did you just sit there looking at it?
What's that?
Did you just sit there?
No, I was just like walking and trying to figure out what I wanted. Because one of the other things, to not go off on too big of a tangent, is when I pogo stick myself on little mini Moab rocks. Like, so when my front tire got stuck in that crevice, and then I just literally just flipped me forward like pretty freaking far. There's a couple small depressions in the top of that rock.
Wow, yeah.
And so I was just like, okay, if my tire hits that, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to preload my front end, and that's going to like just catapult me down this rock even more. And now I'm falling 12 feet instead of the 5 feet that I fell last time.
Yeah.
And it hurt the 5 feet. It hurt a lot. So
like I told John at the top of that rock, it's not like you're falling out off that. They're not jumping off a roof. You're going to tumble down it. Yeah. That doesn't hurt as bad as falling 20 feet.
Yeah.
Straight in the air.
So I did that. And then, I actually did the bigger, Christmas tree rock. I did that the second time rolled up to it.
Okay.
So I ended up taking like the left line, but I remember like I rolled it to it once and I almost went and I was okay. So I went back. And as I was pedaling up to it, I had this conversation with myself. I was like, is this something that you want? Like right before I got to the point of no return. And I said, yes. And I said, then you're going. Like, and I did it. Right. Yeah. And so then I went out and we rode again with my son. Mm-hmm. And so I showed him. He's like, are you going to do it, Dad? I'm like, no. You know, I'm not doing it right
retiring.
Now. Like, yeah, no, like not for a while.
Walking
like
away this, champion right now.
I learned a few things on that of I almost paid the price. I didn't have to. So I need to fix a few things before I do it. But I hit that flow state where it was just like,
yeah,
I was so focused and as scary as that was, it was so nice because all the problems, all the bullshit in the world did not exist. Mm-hmm. Like there was a whole bunch of Canadians that were talking about some other rock features that were right there next to us. And like, I'm sitting there and the guy's like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of Canadians. The guy is moving here, marrying a chick, and him and his buddies came and they're mountain biking out there. Hmm. And, yeah. And so it was just like all like white noise, like everything shut off. And then it was just like 100% like in the moment. Fucking
Canadians to shut up with their little Canadian heads, like on South Park.
He's just like, hey, shut up, hey. No. But like I was in the flow state. Like it was, you know, like I was totally in tune and aware of what my bike was doing and what I was doing and how I was reacting and interacting with the rock feature that I was riding.
Were you surprised at how high the pitch of your voice was?
No, I don't remember any of it. But it was just like, I felt all the things that were uncomfortable. So those are all the things that like, I want to work on before I go back and do the rock. So I can ride it more confidently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there's that fear, right? But then there's like the whole like flow state and like getting out of that comfort zone.
Yeah.
And it's like now it left me at this place of like, okay, like I'm ready to open up my perspective, like or broaden my horizons, if you will, you know, to go to the next step of whatever my evolution with mountain biking is. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where Joe came out with, okay, I did this thing. I was able to play with this band. I was able to do this gig.
Right.
And what's next? Mm-hmm. But for something bigger beyond just playing music with a jazz band, you know, of really actually seizing the day of what his opportunity is with having life. You know, and so for me, that's why I took my son back out. We went riding again. It was just like, let's go experience these things. Let's not harp so much on life lessons, and let's just go out and experience new things together.
And I think that ties into another point in here that we talked about early on is the lost souls category. They touch on it very early on about what lost souls look like. They have a great scene of when they save this guy. He's like a stockbroker trader and
he's a hedge fund manager.
Yeah, oddly enough.
Yeah, GME.
Yeah, probably a lot of those souls just went up to the great beyond recently. So I think we all, and it's super important to think about what Joe is trying to do in the movie. He's trying to achieve his goal of being a professional musician, but even more specifically, he latches onto this idea of playing with her will be the thing that makes him happy, as though that's in perpetuity, right? And what we've all learned is we set this goal for ourselves, and that's the thing that will make me happy, whether it's a financial goal, whether it's a
professional goal,
whether it's buying this thing, this bike will make me happy. A lot of us, I think, are trapped in the I say that with a garage full of bikes. don't you fucking judge me. I see those judgmental eyes right now. We whatever it is, his is great because it wasn't one of those shiny, if I buy this car kind of thing. But we all label something as the pinnacle achievement. And what he did was believe that playing with her will be my happiest moment, and then it will carry on forever, and I will always be happy playing with her. And what we all know to happen is that will become a job, and that will be just as hard, and we'll have shitty days and all of that stuff. Because what kind of, just as you were talking about some of this stuff, going down the rock and doing that stuff with your son, what I thought about was that person that was a hedge fund manager there that became a lost soul. I guarantee when that person started, that was his achievement, was becoming that thing, making money, whatever, like the reasons where they don't go into any of it. It's just this little snippet like scene. But the reason, like, everybody gets in the place they're going to get because of something, right? Even, and I'm not like trying to diminish anybody working at McDonald's or anything like that, but my daughter's trying to enter the workforce, and she wants to work at a coffee shop. And that's a big, good entry level job, as is working in fast food, as is working anywhere. And people at that place in life, that's meaningful to them. And then we all go, no, working at fast food isn't the way to go, or being a Starbucks manager and or a hedge fund guy or whatever. Like, all of it becomes a job, number one. I was talking with a kid named Kyle that I rode with recently, take some pictures and stuff. And he was like, I want to get better at photography. I'm not sure if I want to learn to make money off of it. I would like, maybe like, it'd be cool to be free to do that and stuff. And what I said to him was like, you start making money off anything and it becomes a job. Like, I've learned that, you know, I wanted to train dogs. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do that. And everything that's fun, as soon as you start attaching finances to it, it's just a fucking job. And I'm here to tell you that, like straight up, because, and I can say that from somebody that had probably one of the best jobs on the fucking planet. I was in a helicopter unit for 10 years, five of it full time. I got paid to fly around in a helicopter. And a lot of times I got paid more than the average rate. I got paid overtime to go out and do kick ass shit all the time. And it's a job. And the only thing that brought me back to that realization was taking people on ride-alongs occasionally when we were able to get them up and finagle the system to follow the rules to take ride-alongs. And that was their first time ever. And it would put me back to the first time I ever rode in a helicopter, which was on duty in law enforcement. And it's like living vicariously through those people helped me maintain perspective on the nights where I'm like, this is so fucking boring flying around in this helicopter. And I'm like, some schmuck somewhere is paying tens of thousands of dollars for this experience that I'm getting paid to do. And over and over and over again, I interacted with people that would volunteer to do search and rescue stuff. And we had deputies who were bitching because they had to go get called out on search and rescue stuff. And it always becomes a job. And then I had the opportunity to fly in a T-38 jet with some volunteer pilots that we had that are U-2 pilots out of in the Air Force near us. And I was like, you guys have to, like, literally, I've never done anything better in my life. It's the best fucking kick-ass thing I've ever done. And I was like, you guys have a job that just made mine feel like shit. And they're like, it's just a job, man. Like, literally, we come to work. There's more shit involved in flying than just flying. Cause even for them, the purity of flight. And so those lost souls to me are people that have just gotten mired down in the like the grind. And you keep forgetting that, like, this thing you're trying to attain, when you do attain it, what next? Like that. Like, so sometimes it's the it's the journey there that matters more. And I think the movie does a phenomenal job at making you realize that stop and smell the roses. I mean, that like old adage, that's what 22 did when she pulled out that pocket full of random little fucking trinkets, a spool of thread that his mom had sewed something on his thing. She's like that pizza crust you said, and all these things that were just like, that's just fucking trash, you know? And having kids will do that for you, because they pick up shit where you're like, that's nothing. Like, we were out the coast with my niece and nephew recently, and like the crap they wanted dragged back to the house with us, I was like, dude, that's just junk, you know? But to him, it was like a fucking boat that he had made and all these things. And you just realize, like, being around kids will keep that perspective for you. And it will also help you remember, like, I think my daughter asked me what I thought of the movie. And so we had a good conversation about it and stuff. And I said, one of the most meaningful things that I've ever done, like the picture in my mind that I hold most dearest as to the most important, I don't want to say day, but moment. If I can just say, this picture captures the moment that I was at peace. It's not the picture I have of myself in that jet. It's not the picture I have of myself hanging out of a helicopter on a hoist cable. It's not riding my motorcycle that it's been a bunch of money on and went on a fancy trip on it. Instead, like all of these pictures that I have of things that are like achievements. I think that movie made me realize something that I had known since I took the picture was a summer, probably a good 10 years ago. My daughter was in, I'm going to say she's about 6 years old, 6 or 7. So maybe even more, it's more than 10 years ago. fucking air conditioner was out in our house. It's blazing hot in the summer. We went up to the gym to swim in the pool. And it was that like summer evening, 7 o'clock, where the sun has gone behind the building. It's finally cool enough to go, like, it's not feel like hell out here. And she was asleep on a little lounge chair and had just her towel over her. And I looked over her and realized she's the most peaceful being that I've ever seen. And I was like at peace. We weren't doing anything. I wasn't doing anything. Well, I guess it costs to be there at the gym, but like the whole layout was the simplest thing ever. And I told her, I was like, that's literally one of my most peaceful moments there, because it didn't take anything to achieve it. And I have a lot of great pictures. I have pictures with my wife while we're out mountain biking, but all of those are events. I'm going here to mountain bike, and I'm going here to do this experience, and I'm going to do all that. And while those pictures capture those moments of life, they're still in the pursuit of things. And that picture that I just spun and took of her, and this was before social media and everything, so it wasn't anything to even post. It was just like I wanted to somehow capture that moment as a time capsule of the most at peace I had felt and probably really still feel at this point. I can't think of a picture that embodies more peace than that. And that's what that kept hitting me from the movie.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I have a photo that has a lot of meaning for different reasons, but we were in Colorado for my wife's cousin's wedding, and we were at the Estes Park, the National Forest there in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And my son was running through a field, like in this beautiful valley, right where like a glacier came through the Rocky Mountains. And he's like, I think he's like maybe like 16 months. I forgot how old he was. And he's in a fucking onesie.
Nice.
And he's like, just like bobbling through this beautiful field, like this majestic like background. She's like, Carol, the kid has no idea, like he's like one of the coolest fucking places ever. Mm-hmm. And he's just like doing his own thing, and it was just like, he has no idea how fucked up the world is. Like, it's bad. Like, why do we lose that perspective as adults, right? Like, why, you know? It's, and it's difficult. I have to remind myself of that. And it's just,
why do we stop running everywhere? Watching my niece and nephew that last week, you know, and then your son right there, like, they're little kids. They fucking run everywhere. Why did we stop doing that? Like, literally, why don't we just like, I got to go get some. I'm just going to run in the other room.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I know why I've stopped running.
but yeah, no. Should start running just, everywhere. Yeah, maybe I should start running everywhere. Shit,
yeah. but yeah, no, it's hard, you know, and that movie, I guess like my biggest takeaway is to not fixate on the things that I want to change and to spend more time enjoying the things that are just there. Mm. You know, the fact that I can drive down the road and go to Granite Bay with my son and just after pedaling for 15 minutes, kind of be detached from the world, you know, back through some trails, and all the noise, all the bullshit, all the politics, all the crap goes away. you know, bills, all that other stuff, employees, none of that matters. You know, it's just like we're there, we're present in the moment. You know, and the other thing is just while I'm trying to prepare him for the world the best that I can, I don't want to force him. I don't want to be one of the catalysts that forces him to grow up faster than needed. So that's, you know, that's one of the big things. It was just like, shit, like preparing him is fine, but I don't want to, compress that timeline of him being a kid and him being innocent and be like, you got to get ready because the world's fucked up and you need to be able to kick its ass when it, you know, it gets in your way.
I feel like that's one of the things that I regret to some extent, but it also will pay out for her in the long run, is that my daughter was robbed of some of the innocence of youth and stuff because of my profession, and her mom is actually a dispatcher at the same agency and stuff. So by extension, because of the professions we had, she was exposed to much more reality of life than a kid with parents that are not in that profession. And so it's good and bad, you know. I mean, it is what it is. I can't change that, but that's a bummer too. So I can appreciate that you're doing that for your son, and you want him to be a kid as long as possible and experience all the things. And I think that's what the movie, this is funny. Shit, we might even need it. What I think we should do, because we're running like out of time on where we want to keep this, usually at about an hour ish for these conversations.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting here going, we could just keep talking about this for another 2 hours. Oh, yeah, literally, for sure. I mean, we could. So what I think we should do is we should watch it with a couple other people. You need to watch it with your son. I'll have another discussion with my daughter. I'm going to watch it with my wife. And I think we come back in several podcasts down the road, maybe like our 15th or 20th or something like that. We'll do an update to this one and have some different perspectives on it and stuff. Because I truly believe it's a movie you can watch multiple times and take away multiple things, depending on what mental space you're in, number one, who you're watching it with. And I think it just deserves even more conversation. And probably in doing that, what we'll also have is more podcasts under our belt with different topics that we will then play into that. And we'll come up with a whole other set of themes on this. But really, my biggest thing that I would love to share with people for this one with this movie is just enjoy where you're at and what you have. And man, that's such a hard thing for me to say, because you have to balance that with also not being stagnant. And that's what's fucked up, is everybody wants to tell you is like, be happy with the way you look, be happy with the things you have, you know, and you're told that as a kid, you have to be happy with that thing. Well, what if you're not happy with those things? What if you're not happy just being here? And I'm not saying don't just go chase another fucking car and stuff like that. But if cars truly make you happy, then also be happy with that and stuff. But that's the hard part, is that's the duality of life, is the, fuck man, that's even like how the Constitution is, like the ability for like the pursuit of happiness, you know, like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are, it's a given right to you by our government specifically, that you get to pursue happiness. And I think that's what this movie is trying to say, is remember where happiness occurs, and it occurs in a lot of forms. You know, if you're chasing wealth simply because that's where your happiness lies, when you achieve wealth, because it's an arbitrary thing, you won't be happy there either. And I think that there's so many, all these little catchphrases, money doesn't buy happiness. Well, it really doesn't. You know, there's plenty of very happy poor people, but there's also plenty of unhappy rich people.
And vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
no, and I would say, you know, one of the difficult things, like one of the cool things that my friend does with his son is every day they start off by saying to each other, like, you know, I think I forgot how old his son is, but what are they grateful for? Just one form of expression of gratitude. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's, hey, I'm grateful for you, or vice versa, or mom, you know, it's, we're grateful for something. It's just,
and that's something people can do too, is write that down. Like, I journal, and it has a place for gratitude. It's incredibly important to start off
with something positive, you know, which is huge. And, you know, I think hopefully by the time that we come back to like kind of recap watching the movie again and stuff. We'll have gotten some feedback from people that have obviously listened to the podcast, but had the opportunity to watch the movie as well.
Yeah.
You know, and we can touch on some of those things as well.
Yeah. So if you do watch the movie and you want to interact with us, shoot us a message on Instagram, Remedy Podcast on Instagram. They can email us through the website. I'm sure there's an info thing there.
info@remedypodcast.com.
Yeah. But reach out to us. Tell us what your thoughts are on it. Would be awesome if you shot a little video message. If you want to be up in our IG stories kind of thing, you know, shoot us a video message, tag us in it, the Remedy Podcast on Instagram, and we can share that kind of stuff. We really want this podcast to be more of an interactive thing than us two schmos sitting here
pontificating.
Yeah, exactly.
On our digital soapboxes.
Yep. But watch the movie. Can't say enough about it. Yeah. Again, it's a conversation that could go on for a long time about this, and we will definitely give it even more thought in the not so distant future.
Yep.
So right on. Well, thank you, buddy. Appreciate your time as always. Thank you all for listening that joined us on this, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Later.